everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Retro Raw Rundown here on Inside the Ropes. My name is Kenny McIntosh. Joined, as always, when we delve back into the olden days of wrestling, which still feels like modern days, which is weird. I'm here with Sondra. I'm Kenny. Hi, Sondra.
Hi, Kenny. It doesn't feel that modern, I guess, but maybe that's just because I didn't watch it when I was growing up. It doesn't, you know, ring any bells for me. It does sort of feel modern, though, because we live in two timelines, which is always strange. Like, do you find yourself in conversation when you're talking about, like, things from the Attitude Era being like, oh, yeah, well, like, you know, a couple weeks ago when Steve Austin did this thing with The Rock, and people, like, look at me like, you mean, like, 20 years ago, right? And I was like, well, yeah, but, like, it happened last week.
Because it did happen last week, but just, you know, in the other timeline that we watch. Do you know the thing that struck me about this show?
Exactly.
The thing that struck me about this episode in particular was if you compare it to this week's Raw, for example.
That's not a good idea.
And the thing that was weird to me about it was I felt like this show, every match had star power in some way, shape, or form. Like, it felt like we had, like, Billy Gunn and X-Pac, who are part of a big storyline. We have Mean Street Posse and Patterson and Briscoe, which the fans just could not get enough of. We have Test having to face the Corporation again. Vince versus Shane. Mankind facing the Acolyte. Shamrock and Triple H. Big Show Undertaker. Deborah Sable. Rock and Austin. And it just felt like it was always involving people who were kind of over. And I think the thing that kind of struck me watching it was how bad a job they have done at today's people. And the problem is a lot of today's people are actually more talented than the people who we're watching on these shows, but the character development's like paddling pool level now in a lot of ways in the main roster, whereas these characters were just so popular because every week they would be in stories and, you know, like Billy Gunn's story. Billy Gunn's story's kind of been going on for ages, you know, because they had the titles, then they went solo. Then they kind of did their own thing. Then they swapped to they were doing things with. Then they got back together, you know, to reunite and win the titles. And then they couldn't get it done. And he was annoyed. So it kind of plays back quite a while. Mm-hmm. So that was just something that struck me when I was watching this this week. But we did open the show. This is number 310 if you're watching along with us on the network. When I'm recording these right now, I've not recorded the heats with Finn yet. So I can't really tell you what happened on heat yet. But for the May 17th episode, I should be at the point where I'm back to doing the heats before and can read the results out.
But at least I don't think there was anything on this show that was confusing because of heat. Like, as far as I remember, watching it last night, I wasn't lost at any of the plot development, which sometimes if I, you know, don't get your heat recap or, you know, I'll text you and ask, like, what the fuck is going on? But I think it was pretty clear on this one.
Yeah, pretty clear. The opening video package, obviously, they kind of just tell us, you know, the corporate ministry were beating up everybody who used to be in it.
I'm really liking these, you know, previously on video packages. They haven't been doing these that long, right, in this particular format. And we had the one on that we talked about over on Patreon, and then this one, I think they're really well done because it's really kind of highlighting the stories that are going into it, and I don't know, like, I'm enjoying the video packages.
Yeah, it makes sense. It's good. Shane McMahon comes out to start the show with the corporate ministry. They have the theme tune, Sondra.
They do have the theme tune. It's like that weird mashup thing, right? Like, they have the ministry music kind of underneath No Chance, and it's all remixed, and I love it. I absolutely love it.
I live for it. It's so good. We basically have the entire corporate ministry talking. We've got Shane talking about, you know, people living paycheck to paycheck and they're losers. Triple H is saying that at the pay-per-view he's going to end Rock's career. Undertaker talks about how he's going to beat Austin, take the title, and he's going to do it for a power higher than him, and he'll be the Lord of Darkness. Shane said he'll be the ref. And then
when Undertaker said he would be the executioner, I got flashbacks to that one street fight.
Oh, remember In Your House It's Time? Oh.
Yeah. Yep.
What a time
where they went
to
out to the fountain and then the pile driver had, like, his water came out of his shoes.
So good. But as Shane's kind of, you know, giving us his proclamation, we see Mankind, Test, Ken Shamrock, and The Big Show all on the ramp with 2x4s. And Mankind says that they're all disgruntled former employees of the corporation. They formed a union of people, and he struggles for a moniker, but then he basically comes up with an up yours moniker for Shane.
It's a union of people you ought to respect, son.
Yes. So Up Yours, Shane is the acronym. Mankind says they're paid, at least with Vince, they got compensated. With Shane, their paychecks suck. Mankind calls him a twit. And then they come down, enter the ring, there's a brawl, they get the better of the corporate ministry. Shane basically shits himself and yells that they've not seen the last of the corporate ministry tonight. So setting up, you know, we've got the villainous faction, and already we've had some baby faces getting a little bit of a comeuppance on them. So I thought that was a good way to start the show. What did you think?
It was a good way to start the show. I've heard of the Union. I've never seen the Union. And so I kind of got excited that the Union was finally here. Mr. Sondra, actually, when he saw the episode description, goes, oh my gosh, it's the Union. They're here. I don't believe they're one of the factions that WWF looks on nearly as fondly as some others. But I don't know why they have 2x4s, but I guess it's smart. Like, they have weapons just kind of at hand to beat up the corporate ministry, which is helpful. I like the idea that they're all, like, disgruntled employees and whatnot, and that's why they're kind of banding together against the corporate ministry. All of that makes sense. Them being a union is kind of cheesy, right? Because it's like, I find it funny that a company like WWF is making the union the good guys. Like, just given their political leanings and whatnot, you'd think that they'd be like, oh, unions are horrible. That's obviously not how I feel, but, you know, like, it's just, it was interesting to me. But yeah, I mean, I like them banding together against the corporate ministry. I think that's effective. The Up Yours thing was pretty contrived, but it's Mankind and I like him, so I guess I'll forgive it. But yeah, like, it's good that the corporate ministry has someone kind of going against them, and they, you know, it's full of not the most interesting people, but like Shamrock I love and Mankind I love, and Big Show did a drop kick that one time on SmackDown, so he's not as terrible as he was.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a key again of like there's characters who, like, so Big Show and Test are weaker characters, but by being with Shamrock and Mankind, they're kind of more likable or more tolerable.
And I think it's going to help them. Like, I think in the same way that DX helped, you know, basically everyone in DX kind of find a place, and the way that the corporation helped a bunch of people kind of find a place and establish their character, I think that the union could be very similar, because I think, like, Big Show's just been kind of floating about being a pretty terrible babyface, really. And, you know, Ken Shamrock being angry is always going to be awesome. Test has just been nothing. I mean, when he was in the corporation, he was pretty much just getting beat immediately. So I think it could be good for all of them. And Mankind can't really, like, do a whole lot physically, but he's great at talking, and he's still a great character who is beloved.
And it's like, you know, when the Authority would do their stuff in 2013, they would tend to just kind of drone on the whole time. Whereas on this show, even though the corporate ministry were going to get the upper hand, and they were going to, there was still the baby faces getting a little bit of the upper hand, so you felt more invested, I think. To kind of,
yeah, I think it feels like there's more give and take, and it feels like there are checks and balances. That's and it came to my mind too as I was watching it, and then later on with Vince and Shane and whatnot, it does seem to be like there's a tension and there's a push and pull between the two sides, whereas I think in 2013 it was just the authority constantly all the time. And I know that's kind of how people talk about the McMahon-Helmsley regime or whatever that we're going to get to in a couple of years, that it was just them all the time. And I think you need that kind of balance. You need there to be some sort of, you know, you need them to get some comeuppance. I mean, you don't want the baby faces to just win right away. There's no drama in that. But you do need there to actually be some sort of hope, I suppose. I do have a question, though.
Well, I'm here to answer any questions that you have, if I can.
Where is Shawn Michaels?
So, Shawn Michaels at this point is kind of doing the whole, he's around, he's not around all the time. But what I will say is Shawn Michaels will be coming back soon, given what's happening.
Okay. So, because, I mean, you know, I know that he's not always there and he might not always, you know, be on standby at the phone or whatever. But with Shane McMahon just wreaking havoc and running rampant on the World Wrestling Federation and, you know, changing the whole format of the show later on, I just kind of figure Shawn Michaels might have something to say about that.
He does, and if you...
And I like that there's the looming threat of Shawn Michaels. I mean, who thought that I would be like, no, I find Shawn Michaels to be a compelling and important character in the World Wrestling Federation in 1999.
Well, I mean, if you had gotten to the end of this episode and next week's screenshot came up, maybe you're going to get your wish.
Oh, I didn't actually pay attention to the screenshot, so there we are.
So, it's funny, I remember the No Mercy show, the one on May 16th. I've still got the program that I bought at the event. And the inside of the program is a letter to the fans from Commissioner Michaels welcoming us to No Mercy.
Really?
I'm like, are you only fucking there though, pal, are you?
That's amazing.
Just me and Tiger Ali Singh. Oh, God. Anyway.
Tiger Ali Singh, is it just like he just shows up at the UK pay-per-views?
And Heat,
okay.
So we get a recap kind of what's been happening with Billy Gunn and X-Pac. We do see footage from Heat the night before where they'd kind of made up and then really Billy Gunn just attacked him again. So the dissension continues, which brings us to Billy Gunn, Mr. Ass, with the theme song against X-Pac. So Billy Gunn's kind of gone heel. I did like the bit where Billy Gunn counters the Bronco Buster by putting his boot right into his crotch. Because if you're like part of X-Pac's team, I feel you would kind of know how to get around the Bronco Buster.
Well, yeah, that's the cool thing about friends fighting each other is that they know each other so well, so they should be able to counter each other's moves because they fought together. You know, like these guys have teamed together. And yeah.
So Billy Gunn ends up getting the win in the end with the Famouser, the clean win. He's beating up X-Pac after the match.
It wasn't a clean win. He hit a low blow.
Yeah, but I mean, like there was no interference. He didn't have any weapons.
Yeah.
It was just true. With his body. So he gets the win over X-Pac. Then as he's beating X-Pac up, he goes to get a chair. Road Dogg runs out to stop him. And then they start brawling. Crowd are pretty into it. And then as Road Dogg chucks Billy Gunn out, Billy Gunn comes back in. Starts whacking Road Dogg with the chair. The lights go out. This brings out Kane. People are going nuts. Billy Gunn is a chicken shit and leaves. I thought this was a really good segment to end a pretty good match. What did you think?
It was great. I loved it. X-Pac is becoming my favorite, and that's weird, but I really, really like him. And X-Pac and Billy Gunn are both good at wrestling, so it was very refreshing to see good wrestling. And I thought the match worked. There was an intensity, there was an urgency to it. You could tell these were two friends, but like former friends, because Billy Gunn is so angry about not winning the tag team titles that he's kind of just lost it at this point and become kind of a jerk. And you know, X-Pac feels valiant here. He didn't do anything wrong other than just, you know, retain his tag team titles. But Billy Gunn being a dick to him, and I think on commentary, I think Lawler makes a point. He basically, you know, says similar things to what Daniel Bryan says about the fans. He's like, you know, these fans are disloyal. You know, 2 weeks ago, they loved Mr. Ass. You know, he would say two words and they would say, suck it. And they loved him. And now they don't like him at all. And it's like, well, yeah, like 2 weeks ago, he wasn't being a dick to one of the like coolest guys on the roster. Right. So they highlighted that character change. They really kind of cemented that Billy Gunn is supposed to be an asshole now, right? Like, he's supposed to be a bad guy. And it worked. I think they played their roles really well in the match. And then Billy Gunn winning by being a dick, right? Like, using a low blow on X-Pac and winning and, you know, having his anger manifest in victory. It seems to be working out for Billy Gunn. And then when Road Dogg came out afterwards, it was interesting to see which side he was going to choose, because Billy Gunn has been his tag team partner. But I think it's really clever, even like costume design wise. And I don't know if these guys like did this intentionally. I'm guessing they did. But Road Dogg and X-Pac are still dressed very DX-y. Like, they're still wearing the black and the green, and they still kind of look more like a pair than Mr. Ass does with them, because Mr. Ass is sitting there wearing his, you know, bright pink trunks and his headband, and he looks very flashy and very bright and very separate from them. And so even there's a visual separation on screen that worked for me. And so, yeah, for Road Dogg to kind of turn on his tag team partner and be fighting him and whatnot, there's an emotional drama there. Even if the New Age Outlaws haven't been my favorite, they have been a team for a very long time. And again, like, all their motivations are set, the story works, and I was super into this.
Yeah, I thought Billy Gunn, I like when heel turns happen, and I kind of, for me, the best heel turns in wrestling are kind of when internally I kind of go, oh no, but don't do it. Like, I totally understand why you're going to do it, but don't do it. We can get through this, like, in my head.
Mm-hmm.
So if I can justify why they're turning heel and almost kind of be torn that they are and not want them to, then that's kind of the best way to do it, because
it's when wrestling breaks your heart, but in a good way, you know? Not like when it breaks your heart by giving you a wild card rule and you just want to throw yourself off a cliff, but when it breaks your heart because you're invested in the characters and you want them to be okay and you want them to survive and you want them to triumph, and then they don't. And then, you know, there are on-screen breakups and stuff. It's soap opera. It's Shakespeare. It's storytelling. It's beautiful. I love wrestling.
Yeah, and I think that's why a lot of people right now, you know, are seeking out other platforms of wrestling, you know, whether it's the independents like Black Label and stuff that you watch, or impact that some people have been checking out is that I think a lot of WWE stuff recently has not been hitting that mark.
Mm-mm.
And that's a mark that a lot of people loved from WWE. So it's like if I go and get a great mac and cheese somewhere and then the place that I get great mac and cheese from stops doing great mac and cheese, I might go looking for other mac and cheese.
It's so true. Because it's not the mac and cheese's fault. Like, I love mac and cheese. It's just that place is no longer providing the best.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, because I thought there was flashes of, you know, the kind of stuff that we're seeing in this show, I thought we were getting flashes of that with the, you know, Charlotte coming out and Vince announcing her as in the main event of WrestleMania. But that, that was like right out of this era. But in this era, they, I hate to give Russo the credit again, but he would pay off. He would, you know, it would kind of go, so, I mean, for the most part, apart from the fucking higher power, which we'll get to. But for the most part, you get a storyline that gets a payoff, Nick, and you can kind of trust that it's going to go somewhere.
I think the closest thing we have to this today in within the WWE bubble is I think we're getting kind of similar vibes from Undisputed Era and NXT because there's been dissension between them. Yeah. And it's, again, it's a faction that's been very effective, and breaking up that faction has consequences. It's not just like, you know, having a superstar shakeup and breaking up tag teams for no reason off screen, and then they're just nothing.
It's a thing. So yeah, really good match from these guys, and
it makes me wonder, like, are Road Dogg and X-Pac going to continue to have an alliance? Like, I mean, Kane coming out to help X-Pac again, great. Like, again, Kane and X-Pac are my favorite story on Retro Raw, so I liked seeing Kane help out. I liked seeing Kane involved. It seems like Kane and X-Pac are starting to trust each other more and more and more, which is what I want. I want friendship to prevail. It so rarely does.
Yeah, it's. But I mean, I think the storyline is one of the best going. And I forgot about Kane. So when the lights went out, I didn't realize. And then I clicked. And I was like, oh yeah, it's Kane. Like, so again, I think that's a good sign. So yeah, after that, we then get yelling in Shane McMahon's locker room. But he is he's now come back down. He's had it. So tonight he's changing the show. He's going to do a four corners match with Big Boss Man, Midian, and Visser and Test, which obviously is going to be 3-on-1. A hardcore match with Mankind where he faces the Acolytes. Triple H is going to take on Shamrock with China as the guest referee. Shane saw Patterson and Briscoe in the back, so he wants the posse to take those geriatrics out. Undertaker will face Big Show. For Shane's personal pleasure, Sable and Deborah will be in an evening gown match. Rock will be involved in the Lumberjack match against Austin, with the Lumberjacks being the corporate ministry. So then Vince comes down. Stephanie and Linda come down too. Shane mocks them all. Vince is trying to be the family guy. Shane challenges him to fight. Vince says no. And as they all leave, Shane reveals that it was him that got Stephanie abducted. How do you think Undertaker got in the house? How do you think he got the teddy bear? It was me. Vince then runs back into the ring and is just demolished. And they leave Vince laying. Steph and Linda are really upset. And then Vince accepts the challenge to face Shane later on tonight. I thought this was a really hot segment. And most of the stuff that Shane did made sense. And the fact that Vince didn't immediately go for the match with Shane and only would do it when he found out that Shane was the perpetrator of this thing that we've been seeing play on TV worked for me. Did it work for you? What did you make of it?
I think Shane talked too long. I think it was too long. I think it would have been better if he wouldn't be like changing the format and revealing that he was the one behind Stephanie's kidnapping at the same time. Like, changing the format of the show just seemed unnecessary. It seemed like a power trip too far, I guess, because like he's already on a power trip. We know this. Like, for him to remake all of the matches just kind of seemed like, okay, like we don't know what the matches were supposed to be anyway, right? I don't think we had announced matches unless maybe I wasn't paying attention and we did, but I don't remember it being like, oh, we're hyping this particular match and now Shane is upending everything and changing the rules. So I think that part of it droned on a little bit too much for me. But I mean, seeing Linda on Raw was a delight because I've, you know, been waiting for her to show up. And so I was pleased that she finally did. But I mean, as soon as you know, they were, you know, talking about Stephanie's kidnapping and everything. And when he was like, who do you think let the Undertaker in? And, you know, how do you think he got access? I was like, I fucking knew it. Didn't I call it day one?
You did call it. But I mean, I think that's, I mean, like, I almost feel like what you're saying right now is kind of like why this segment worked for me. Cause like, I knew it was you.
Part of the segment worked for me very well. It was the stuff beforehand that I was just kind of like, can you get to the point? But the stuff where Shane reveals that he's complicit or the orchestrator of Stephanie's kidnapping, that worked because, oh, what a dastardly prick. And also I felt vindicated because I was like, ha ha ha, I knew it. I was right. Because I didn't know. Like, I had no idea that Shane was behind this. Like, this is one of those, like, areas of my knowledge where, like, I knew that there was going to be a corporate ministry, and I know that Vince is the higher power, and I know that, like, I know certain pieces of it, but there's all this stuff in the middle with Shane that I had no idea existed, and I'm kind of fascinated by it.
I think that's what's so good about Retro Raw sometimes is that you kind of have this idea of what you think the timeline is, and then stuff will happen, you'll go, oh,
yeah,
I didn't expect this. I think for me, what worked...
Yeah, like Mankind winning the WWF title a second time, too, was like a complete surprise, a pleasant one. So, yeah, I mean, Shane kind of doing an It Was Me All... He did an It Was Me All Along. Didn't he say It Was Me All Along?
He did.
Like, so I was just cracking up because it was like the precursor, you know? But yeah, like Shane McMahon obviously has just kind of lost it and gone off the deep end. And it's interesting knowing like the... I mean, we don't know what all goes on in the McMahon family, obviously, but like, if you look at the television, you know, Stephanie's been the one in charge, and she's the Vincess, you know, nowadays I'm talking. And Shane's always been the one who seems to be a little bit more background, and like Stephanie feels more like the chosen one. And so you can almost make the story a little bit better by like playing into those real life motivations. Like, they're really taking that on screen because he's like, you know, everyone's so concerned about daddy's little girl. Like, what about Shane? Like, why does he not get any adoration? Why does he not get all of the accolades? Why does he not get, you know, that lorded over and fawned over the way Stephanie does? Like, why is she so special? And so he lost the plot and he was like, fuck it. We're going to kidnap my sister so that I can get at my dad so that I can take over the company.
Yep, that's exactly what happened. But we've got a ton to get through, so let's keep going. Then we get the Mean Street Posse coming out. Briscoe and Patterson come out just in their suits. They're like, look, they're trying to reason with them. Like, look, we can't wrestle. We don't have gear. Why are we fighting? And then the Mean Street Posse shove them, and then Briscoe and Patterson start punching and decking the Mean Street Posse to the roar of the crowd. Did you expect the fans to be so viscerally into Briscoe and Patterson against the Mean Street Posse? And how did you feel about it?
I felt the same way as the fans did. I thought it was brilliant. I mean, the thing is, Patterson and Briscoe are still very trained wrestlers, right? So when they're doing takedowns on the Mean Street Posse, it actually looks really good. And I loved it. Like, it's weird because I still find it hard to be on Vince's side, I think, because Vince has been such a cretin and so despicable. And then also I have current Vince to contend with in my head. But Patterson and Briscoe are just brilliant. They've been such a great part of the show. I loved seeing them deck the Mean Street Posse because I love the Mean Street Posse, too, in a way that, like, I want to see them get beaten up and I want to see them be part of the show. I loved this. I thought it was shenanigans. It was ridiculous. It was so much fun.
Yeah, this was great, and they were, and then they basically whip the shit out of the Mean Street Posse and toss them over the barrier, get a huge pop, and then Errol Hebner just declares them the winner.
So yeah,
they've won. Shane's given directions to the corporate ministry. Then we get Test taking on Bossman, Midian, and Vista. It's basically the three of them just beating the shit out of Test, and I think it was quite dull, but I think it did gain a little bit of sympathy for Test, which I guess was the good part of it. But they just kill him, basically the union has to run down to kind of, you know, save him at the end. But what did you make of this? Because Test, I would say, is probably maybe the weakest member of the union in terms of he's not really had, you know, Big Show's got a lot of name value to him, and he was a pretty big part of WrestleMania and stuff. But Test is quite a low portion of the show. Did you feel that this was this in any way effective way of garnering some sympathy for him?
I can tell it's a start. I mean, putting him like 1-on-3 against the corporate ministry, it's a start, I'll say. And he does get the win. So, you know, he does come out victorious after some shenanigans and whatnot. which is fine. I'm still just not that into Test, so I don't care that much. But I can see that they're trying to build sympathy for him, and they're trying to get me behind him. And I mean, it worked for X-Pac, right? Because I couldn't stand X-Pac for a while, and now he's like my fave. So if they do something decent with Test, then maybe I will start to be more interested in him.
Yeah, I still don't get why those X-Pac heat at this point, because he's really good.
He's really good.
But yeah, Bossman ends up hitting Midian with a chair by mistake, and Test manages to get the win from there. Then he's beaten up, and then the Union come down to save him. Backstage, this show was just like, there's no breathing.
No.
There is no downtime. You are not going to the toilet. There is almost... Every time, if you went to the toilet after this match, Vince has been beaten up in his office by Triple H and Undertaker. That's the backstage. Yep. That takes us to Shane coming out of his match with Vince. He wants the ref to count because Vince, you know, is incapacitated. Vince then staggers out on stage, collapses. Shane's beating him up, sets him up for a Bronco Buster. Shane is dancing around, then gets a clothesline, and Vince hits a Stone Cold Stunner with one arm to get the win. Please, please break that. I'm very curious as to your thoughts on this Vince versus Shane McMahon match.
This was atrocious. It was terrible. The character dynamic made it work. The crowd was super into it. But oh boy, should Shane and Vince not wrestle each other. Those punches are terrible. That clothesline that he sort of tried to hit. Like, how? I think it was Vince hitting a clothesline on Shane. He had his arm completely bent. Like, what are you even doing? I don't understand. The Stone Cold Stunner that he hit, quote unquote. I mean, I guess he hit it better than he takes a stunner, and Shane can take a stunner better than Vince can, but there was something really funny about seeing Vince do a stunner and then also do the Austin like jaw jacking thing and like crawling on top of him and be like, rah, rah. Yeah, I mean, in terms of the wrestling, this was bad. And I think I don't think this lasted very long. I think it was only a few minutes, but it probably could have gone shorter. But in terms of the character work, the crowd was super behind Vince. They were chanting Vinnie Mac at one point. And I think it's still just hard for me to cheer for Vince, like I said. So it was harder for me to get into this than it was like Patterson and Briscoe versus the Mean Street Posse. But I mean, I get what it was. And it was kind of satisfying seeing Shane get beaten up. But it just, I don't really want to see Vince McMahon wrestle.
Yeah, I remember liking this at the time because we hadn't really seen it before. Like, mm-hmm. And I don't really need you to be good at wrestling. I just need to be invested in the characters. So, I like the story of it. Vince getting beat up by Triple H and Undertaker. Vince's terrible stunner I live for. I love it.
He does jump up quite high on it.
He does. I mean, very rare do we give Vince McMahon athletic compliments, but there you go. So, there was some, like you said, there was some drama to it, even though the wrestling itself was atrocious. But, you know, the crowd ran to it. Then we get Mankind versus the Acolytes. This is a pretty brutal match of the Acolytes just really beating the shit out of Mankind. Mankind's using the bell on Bradshaw, trash can, Bradshaw's DDT'd into it, there's chair shots. Mankind hits a double arm DDT after Farouk hit Bradshaw with a chair by mistake. Farouk gets sockled, but Bradshaw recovers, hits him with the clothesline from hell, and then smashes him with a chair a few times. Mankind's then powerbombed into two chairs, and that is too much for Mankind to come back from. 1-2-3, the Acolytes get a pretty big win, maybe the biggest win they've had so far. And I guess this I didn't really realise, but maybe this is like the precursor to the Acolytes. Like they're not the APA. Mm-hmm. Like they're not the APA yet. And they're not, but this maybe, I feel like this is maybe the beginning of them kind of going, well, wait a minute, if these guys do this kind of match, then that's an easier way for us to digest them than if they're trying to be like good professional wrestlers.
Yeah, because that they are not.
Ron Simmons used to be, and Ron Simmons is in sensational shape. I want to give him that. Bradshaw has tits, so, you know.
Accurate. I mean, so do I, but it's fine. Yeah, I didn't really like this that much. It was okay. Like, I mean, the Acolytes doing this kind of match is easier to digest, as you say, because they don't have to actually, like, wrestle so much. There can be a lot more props and shenanigans and all that kind of stuff. But I'm just not into the Acolytes, shockingly. They're just not really my favorites. And Mankind is sympathetic, but he just, like, he gets beaten up and beaten up and beaten up and beaten up. And it's just kind of like, when is enough enough? But, of course, he's valiant and he's going to try and come back and whatnot. But and this was just kind of fine. It was just kind of there for me.
Yeah, it was just kind of there. I think it was
there,
it
the one criticism I have. There's a little too much like partner hitting another partner with a chair by accident. Like that shouldn't really happen twice on a show.
Yeah, it became too much of a trope. I think this is a pretty big win for the Acolytes. I mean, I think it did something for them.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you can tell at this point, like Mankind is about like we're not far away from him needing to take some time off.
He should have taken time off months ago.
Maybe he should have taken time off last June. But yes. But he's, I think, very soon he goes, because I think he does the Over the Edge pay-per-view. I don't think he's around much longer after that, because then he goes and gets his knee scoped.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Then we get Ken Shamrock versus Triple H with China as the referee. It's quite a fun element of China, like, checking her nails so Triple H can, like, cheat in the match. Shamrock trying to overcome everything, even with China there. Shamrock gets the ankle lock in. China grabs Triple H's arm, grabs the rope closer to him so he can grab the rope. But ultimately, in the end, Shamrock's got it on again. She chokes him out. He's going to belly, but Triple H gets him from behind, hits the pedigree, and again, too much for Shamrock. I thought the story of this one, with the heel kind of getting the comeuppance, was a little bit easier, because China and Triple H work better as an act for me than like the Acolytes do. So I thought this was a pretty good story. What did you make of this one?
It was a pretty good story. It's just, it's one of those matches where because China is so blatantly biased, and of course she's going to be, right? Like, of course she's going to be so blatantly biased toward Triple H. But because she's so blatantly biased, there's no way that I think Ken Shamrock is going to win. And he doesn't.
Takes away some of the drama.
And it takes away some of the drama, because I know that if, like, oh, Ken Shamrock is covering Triple H, like, I know that she's not going to count the three. So it actually takes me out of it more than it helps. And, I mean, I know that it's supposed to make me angry at China, and it's supposed to make me angry at Triple H, and I guess it kind of does, because I like Ken Shamrock, I want him to win, but it just, it did take me away from it a little bit. Like, I like China, you know, like, covering her eyes as Triple H hits a low blow on Ken Shamrock to make sure, like, oh, I didn't see it. I'm sorry. I can't do anything about this. But when she's, like, blatantly grabbing the ropes and, like, you know, choking Ken Shamrock instead, like, why didn't she just disqualify Ken Shamrock for not letting go of the ankle lock? You know? Like, she could have done that. So it was fine. I mean, I understand the story they were trying to tell, but the drama of it just wasn't really there for me.
Yeah, I was curious because during the match I was thinking, I know usually you just kind of hate Triple H, so it's, you don't really care, but I thought because you like Shamrock, but then you like China as well, the dynamic might be interesting there. Mm-hmm. I thought it was pretty good. I thought China looked hot as a referee. Just
she did look really hot as a referee.
Big Show versus Undertaker, they have a stare down.
And she was wearing shoes, like she was still wearing heels, but they weren't nearly as tall, so they were actually a little bit more sensible to wrestle in.
There you go. Sensible wrestling shoes. Big Show versus Undertaker is up next. They have a stare down. The match doesn't go too long. And then when Big Show's kind of got the upper hand, Undertaker realizes that he's not going to be able to beat the Big Show. So he gets a baseball bat and smashes it over the Big Show's head. And then the Undertaker realizes that he has Big Show's blood on his neck. So he takes a bit with his finger and licks it.
It's very sanitary.
And then Undertaker just kind of hammers him some more afterwards. Again, I thought this was a pretty good angle for Big Show, because Undertaker's kind of established Big Show needs some, like, he needs something. He's just a bit bland.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like him getting smashed in the face with a baseball bat is the most interesting thing he's done.
It kind of is the most interesting thing he's done in a while. Yeah, you're not wrong. I mean, seeing the Undertaker and Big Show have a confrontation, and this is their first match ever, you know, which is interesting. I think they had a confrontation a couple weeks ago on Raw that Finn and I covered, and it did kind of feel like a big deal, like, to see Undertaker and Big Show face off. So, I mean, they are two very large, you know, larger-than-life characters, and seeing them face off in the ring was kind of a moment. You could tell that it was supposed to be kind of a big moment. I think if the Big Show were more interesting, I would have been more into it. But it was fine for what it was. It wasn't, like, it wasn't as slow in plotting as I thought it was going to be. And also, you could tell the crowd liked seeing the two of them together.
Yeah, I also want to say one of my favorite Undertaker looks is ponytail and goatee Undertaker. I'm all about it. I'm like, he's like, he's in a ministry, but he's corporate, but he's casual.
Yeah. There's a lot going on there.
So then we have Deborah walking backstage in one of the worst evening gowns I've ever seen in my life.
Was it she was trying to basically look country, right? With the pockets, like almost like a country girl shirt.
I mean,
but it looked like it was just fabric painted on.
We could do a 90-minute podcast on her evening gown. I don't know if I'd understand it by the end.
Accurate.
So we're supposed to get Deborah versus Sable. Very simple story of Shane McMahon is a male who likes females and wants to see two attractive females have an evening gown match where one of them is going to end up getting their kit off. Blah, 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 blah. So Deborah comes out first, big pop. Sable's music hits. She's on the big screen. She's like, Shane, I'd love to participate in this match for you, but I'm at the Playboy Mansion getting ready for my second photo shoot. And then she alludes to the fact that Deborah's still going to be having a match. Deborah's confused. Sable's music hits again. Out comes Nicole Bass. Jerry
because
Lawler
Sable says she has a stunt double.
She has a stunt double. Well, okay. I feel like... Okay, I'm going to say it. I feel like it's like you see Sable on Grindr and you're like, oh yeah, let's hook up. And Nicole Bass turns up and you're like, oh, for fuck's sake. So Nicole comes out. I'm trying to find a compliment. I think Nicole Bass looks nicer in the evening gown than she does in her regular clothes.
I think she does too. I think that, again, this is all just so mean-spirited toward Nicole Bass. It's really hard to enjoy any part of it. Because the joke, of course, is supposed to be like, oh, she is hideous and no one wants to see her. And that's why, I mean, Deborah even ends up just taking her evening gown off because we know that Deborah doesn't mind showing herself off anyway. But basically, she forfeits the evening gown match by just stripping herself down so that we don't have to see Nicole Bass's body, heaven forbid. And, yeah, I mean, it's just, it's also mean-spirited. Like, Sable just saying, like, I have a stunt double. And then Nicole Bass comes out and Jerry Lawler does have the line, I wanted to see some puppies and instead we got a dog. So that's not great. I feel really bad for her. I feel really bad for her and the portrayal of her on these shows. And the thing is, I think Nicole Bass is an effective bodyguard. Like, I kind of like her, like I said. And then, you know, when she's about to, you know, like chokeslam Deborah, I don't know what she was trying to do to Deborah, but then when Jeff Jarrett comes out and hits her on the head with the guitar, I think she sold that like a champ. I thought she took a great bump off that guitar shot to the head. So I don't know. I think Nicole Bass played her role really well here, and I kind of like her.
I mean, I think that this is the moment where I'm hoping that when this was over, you were kind of like, oh, like, don't get me wrong, it's not great, but it's actually not as bad the Nicole Bass storyline as we maybe thought it was going to go. Like, we maybe just thought it was fully going to be she is a creator and blah, blah, but there's actually a little bit of a layer to it. So let me explain what happens. So Nicole comes out. Now, I've got to say, if I was a woman and I was Deborah, I would have done exactly what Deborah did here. I would have just stripped off and went, okay, I lose. No
well,
problem.
It makes sense because she sees Nicole Bass and she's like, okay, I really don't want to fight her because I'm not a wrestler. And also, she is a formidable foe, right? So it makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense. So, but then the thing is, Deborah, I think there's this really clever piece of storytelling that's layered in the misogyny of the way it's portrayed, which is that Deborah strips off, right? And she's like showing off her body. And Nicole Bass gives her this look. And I don't know whether I'm just making this up, and I could be, but I felt like the woman behind Nicole Bass was looking at Deborah and going, they're never going to feel about me the way they feel about you. These people are never going to give me that reaction. No matter how hard I work, what I do, like, you are what people want and I am not. And there's something kind of heartbreaking about that, but, like, I like that element of, like, that look that she gave her, which then resulted in I'm going to kill you.
Mm-hmm. Which is why I think I find Nicole Bass to be a very sympathetic character, and I don't think I'm supposed to because she's with Sable, right? And Sable's a baddie. But Deborah's supposed to be a baddie, too.
Well, this is kind of Nicole Bass's babyface turn.
Mm-hmm.
Because so then Nicole Bass is going to go for Deborah. Jeff Jarrett runs down, hits a fucking tremendous guitar shot. It was great. Now then, what's interesting, Val Venus?
It was one of the best guitar shots we've seen on Retro Raw, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Then Val Venus runs down, and he runs down. He beats up Jeff Jarrett and he carries off Deborah. But the thing that's kind of hidden there is Val Venus came down and kind of well, he was late to it, but he saved Nicole Bass from getting mm-hmm. more comeuppance, to which I was so gloriously smug in my head going, oh, I can't wait till Sonda has to be like, Val Venus is the gentleman?
No, but he's not the gentleman. He's not the gentleman. He's only beating up Jeff Jarrett so that he can take Deborah. Because the whole thing was that it looks like he's running down to save Nicole Bass, but he's only saving Nicole Bass because it gets Jeff Jarrett out of the way so he can take away Deborah. He's not doing anything nice for Nicole Bass here. He's still a cretin. Don't worry.
Okay, we'll see how it plays out. But, no, I thought Val coming down... I like the idea that Val comes down, he kind of saves Nicole Bass, but is he saving her as a kind of a... Here's one back for what you did for me. And then, but at the same time, he's still got Deborah. So there's a lot going on. I like the layers to it.
Because
so,
I kind of took it more as like, he saved Nicole just by virtue of Jarrett out of the way so he could take Deborah. Because that's the whole thing, is that Val Venus has wanted Deborah, right? And Nicole Bass wants Val Venus. So it's this whole like thing. But yeah, like he carries off Deborah basically like, you know, oh, you're my prize that I get. And Deborah never has a problem with any of this. She's just like, okay, yeah, I'm going to go with it. That's fine.
I'm always the Nicole Bass in the situation.
Are you?
I mean, I'm never the Deborah. Anyway, so just a delve into my psyche. so then we have Jeff Jarrett chasing to the back to try and find Deborah, who Val Venus was carrying backstage. We get Rock and Austin facing off in a lumberjack match here. The lumberjacks come down. Rock and Austin are trying to fend off the corporate ministry. Union runs down. Now everybody's brawling, it's all going on, and it all ends with Undertaker, Austin, Triple H and Rock on the top of the stage. China and Triple H are beating up The Rock. I popped so hard for when The Rock just right-handed China. I was like, yeah, fucking batter her! Because she never gets comeuppance. And it's frustrating, so it's always good. And they do it quite well of staggering when people hit China. Like, it's not all the time, so when it happens, it kind of feels like a moment. Which is a good way to play it, because if this is what happens in the end, when she goes on to just be a regular wrestler, everything that's special about her is taken away.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas at this point, she still feels special. And then Rock gets thrown off the stage, then Undertaker throws Austin off the stage through two tables, JR saying, you know, his back might be broken, and we end the show with Undertaker and Triple H kind of standing tall. The corporate ministry's plan has worked. I wonder who's going to show up next week to not be happy about that.
About his former... See, and it's funny, because when I asked where is Shawn Michaels, I didn't know that he was going to show up next week, so...
But, I mean, I guess it actually works from the story that Shawn turning up next week is what should happen, and it's what does happen. That's what you were thinking, well, he should be around.
Well, he should be, yeah. Like, he should be around to react to this, because he still has the matchmaking power, right? Like, he still has jurisdiction over everyone on the roster except for Stone Cold Steve Austin. So he should be able to say, hey, Shane, you don't get to make all these matches. Hey, Shane, you don't get to do all this dastardly stuff to everyone. Like, I was trying to, you know, leave the WWF in your hands, but if you're going to be such a dick about it, then no, I have to put my foot down and interfere. And it's interference that I actually kind of want. Like, even though... I think Shane was too all over the show. Like, I think there was a little bit too much of him. It's still, there's still enough checks and balances that it's not as egregious as, like, now.
Okay, so where would your thumb be for this episode of Raw is War?
This one's a thumbs up. I enjoyed it again. Like, I'm actually enjoying this period in 1999 quite a lot. There's so much going on, and I think it's a testament to all of the factions working so well and kind of, like... If I'm able to follow who's in what faction, which is sometimes difficult, like if they don't dress alike, then sometimes it's, you know, hard to remember who goes where. But pretty much everyone on the show, I can point to, you know, their motivations and their character stuff and figure out why they are where they are. And that's nice. That's exciting.
Yeah, this is a thumbs up show for me. I'm a big fan of these kind of May 1999 Raws up until Owen's death. But I really like the chaos of it and the fact that we're getting like, five pay-per-view matches in one night, and they all have story implications that lead to the next week that also lead to the pay-per-view, and you know, that kind of stuff.
I think they've struck a little bit of a balance right now too, between too many heel turns and too much shenanigans for shenanigans sake. Like, we saw on SmackDown, for instance, we saw like some turns and some people out of the corporation and, you know, forming the union on this Raw. It's all happened rather quickly, but it doesn't feel like it's happened without reason. You know, it's not just like, oh, and now I'm turning on you because we needed a heel turn to pop a rating in this particular hour. It feels like it's organic and like it's moving along, and they've actually struck more of a balance that I wanted.
Yeah, I would agree. Just a couple of notes for this week. Nothing huge going on, but Cornette had big praise backstage for his job filling in for JR for Lawler, sorry, on Raw and SmackDown.
Did we ever find out why Lawler wasn't there?
I don't know why he wasn't there. Maybe it's something to do with the fact, because I know he was starting. Was his Mayor of Memphis thing happening then? Lawler, Mayor of Memphis. Because I'm sure, like, was it this time when it happened?
I don't even know what that is. Was he running for mayor?
Jerry Lawler ran for Mayor of Memphis. And when was the... It was 1999. So I have a feeling this might be when it was. I can't find the date in 1999. But I will try and find out where he, let me just see if I can get on here. Mayor.
I mean, it's a shame he didn't get elected, because we could have had Cornette on commentary instead, and he is so much better.
That's true.
I could really do without Jerry Lawler when Deborah's walking back and says, I want a puppy, I want a puppy, here puppy, here puppy. Shut the fuck up, die in a fire.
Well, I mean, so he ran in July. So maybe that was him kind of like starting his build to be mayor or something like that, or to try and be mayor. He actually didn't do too badly. He got like third or something.
Yeah.
Sable was away at the mansion shooting her Playboy cover, which is a September release, which ends up being a Rina Mero cover, because obviously she leaves the WWF. The issue with her is the centerfold sold 1 million copies on the newsstand.
Wow.
Which was up from the normal 700,000 that Playboy would usually do in 1999. There was a guy called Rod Kechter, whose son died in the Columbine shootings, and he had actually called WWF and asked them if they could mention it on TV, because his son was a big Steve Austin fan, which is why they did the opening last week on it. And after the Backlash pay-per-view, Rock and Mankind called up Adam Kechter, the younger brother of Matthew, who passed away, who was watching Backlash with the school's football team that night to kind of try and forget about his brother's death. So
that's sweet.
The WWF Superstars, even though we don't watch it, it's like the D Show or something, they did a really good tribute on Rick Rude, which was very honest, and Vince McMahon talked in it, and it was supposed to be really good. I've been trying to find it because I quite like to watch it, but I can't find Superstars from April of 1999 anywhere. They also did a pretty honest piece on Big Show, Paul White, talking about how he wasn't a very good college basketball player and why that didn't work out for him, and he got into wrestling and all that kind of stuff. So, and also, wrestling had 18 of the top 20 sports videos this week. 15 were WWF, and WCW had the other three, the highest of which was the number 4 biggest selling sports video in America, which was Goldberg.
Okay.
So, there you go. Whose song should play us out, Sandra?
I think it has to be the Corporate Ministry, right? I mean, it's the debut of their theme. I know we're going to play it a lot, but like, I mean, we better start this off right.
Yeah, let's start it off right. Actually, just as we're going off air here, Sean Barry has sent a thing out in the Facebook community saying, so just finished listening to Retro Ron. First of all, great to hear Kenny McIntosh back. But what about those documents that Vince had for The Undertaker? Do we ever find out what they were? Or maybe that's what's in the locked box.
Now,
that
seriously? Yep.
Do you remember there's a thing not too long ago where somebody was like, imagine if they bring out Rod McMahon, Vince's brother?
That's right.
Like the brother who nobody talks about. I don't even care. Just like have a fake guy come in and be Rod McMahon. I'm just all about it.
I would love that.
So what's the plug, Sandra?
Follow me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW. Follow Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. Follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes. Check us out on Patreon, patreon.com/InsideTheRopes. You can hear us talk. You can hear Finn and me talk Backlash. You can hear Kenny and me talk SmackDown. You can hear all sorts of other bonus content going up there on Patreon. YouTube.com/InsideTheRopes for lots of video interview content. And go to InsideTheRopes.co.uk for tickets to live events.
Okay, so here's plays out as the Corporate Ministries theme tune. It is tremendous. Druids with business cards. We'll be back in a couple of days with the new episode for May 10th, 1999, where a certain commissioner shows up to show Shane McMahon what's what.
And I'm actually excited to see him, and I'm questioning all of my life decisions.
We're also going to see the in-ring debut. No, I won't give it away. It's funny. Okay, I'm not going to give it away.
Okay.
We basically get the reverse of this week where everything's booked against the heels. It's so good. if I were a big fat manager, I'd be scared. So... thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back in a couple of days. Take care. Bye.
Bye.